This is the John Clayton Show
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in on the conversation at 866-979-ESPN. Now, here's your host,
the professor,
John Clayton.
And call us here, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Do you like the start of the offseason right now for the Seahawks with the defensive hirings? Do you like what you heard and saw from Russell Wilson this week at the Pro Bowl and what you might see tomorrow? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, or anything else that's on your mind. Let's go to Derek in Redmond. Hey, Derek.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you're feeling better. I know you've gone through a lot of physical challenges. I wanted to ask you specifically how you feel like the Seahawks can improve themselves in free agency, specifically along the offensive and defensive lines. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I ask it that way is, number one, you're a great local resource for understanding how contracts actually work in the NFL. So that dispels all that ridiculousness about, will Russell Wilson be traded or not? Of course he won't. But I used to bank the Seahawks. I used to be a member of their banking team.
Okay.
And this was during the Todd Lewicki era. And it was my job, you know, to understand, you know, how it worked. And one thing I found out, you know, how, you know, their finances and how they managed the camp was a diamond. You know, picture points north and south and east and west. And at those points on the offense, you're going to have your quarterback. You're going to have, you know, typically a quarterback or a running back, you know, as north-south points of the diamond and your wide receivers. But the strength, the equator of it is your line, and that's where the bulk of your money is. But, you know, big contracts tend to be at the diamond. Same thing on the defense, you know, with corners at the end, you know, and in the Seahawks era, you know, safeties, you know, at one end of the diamond. And, you know, they stuck to that. And, you know, this is how the finance people describe how they managed it. And, you know, considering, you know, we don't have a whole lot of draft capital right now, what do you think we could do in free agency? Because obviously, you know, with a division with Aaron Donald in it, you got to have an answer.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's not. And you have, knowing the finances and all that stuff, I mean, you know that, you know, they're not going to pay $18, $19 million for a defensive end. That's not John Snyder. He doesn't like to do that. But I think what it comes down to is that, I mean, you can obviously take the second round pick and draft an offensive lineman. That could be one starter there. And then, you know, you figure out two $6 million, $8 million signings that you can get there. And so, you know, they don't have to go overly expensive, but I think they can just be smart about it and take care of that. And, you know, maybe at the most.
Do you think that there's enough talent out there in the free agent pool to do that, you know, to improve?
There's 586 unrestricted free agents. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is.
yeah. Well, thank you for that insight. You know, I certainly appreciate it. You know, and, you know, I guess, you know, a second part of the question is one thing I learned about lending money to all sorts of different organizations as a commercial banker is any organization, if they can do three things well, you know, they're going to be good at what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's one, identify talent, two, develop talent, and three, retain it. And, you know, specifically, you know, in the free agent market, you know, they got to retain, you know. So, I mean, I hear what, you know, Bobby Wagner, I mean, I'm hearing $55 million. I think we need 80 to really make, you know, to improve in our division, considering, the lines, you know, on the defensive and offensive side of the ball in this division.
But also,
you know, because we got to protect Russell.
He's not
getting younger. And there's no Dan Marino as far as release.
No, but I'll tell you the thing that's interesting is that you bring up the idea, you know, the other teams in the NFC West, well, one issue they're having is that they may not be able to keep all their players. I mean, how can the Rams?
Well, the Rams, you know, if they don't win their Super Bowl, I think they're in purgatory forever.
Yeah, you know,
or at least a decade, because they're all in.
Arizona sounds like they may not re-sign Chandler Jones. Think about that.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I'm coming from. In a division you know, that have all these weapons on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, considering those three things that I mentioned, identify, develop, and retain talent. You know, it seems to me we're going to have to lead on the third one this year to get, you know, to get back, you know. Well, I think we can win the division. I think that, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, in that skills competition demonstrates once again he has the best deep ball in the NFL.
Right.
But I think, you know, just personally, he needs to dial it down a little bit. And accept some responsibility, and you know, too much in love with the home run ball. You know, let's just make first downs and stay on the field instead of, you know, long forever. And I think he's a, you know, a long ball hitter at a 150 average right now.
Yeah, but I'll tell you the thing that I thought was interesting, and it turned out to be a disaster. When I was watching the Kansas City game last week, in the first half, to me, I said, this is what Russell needs to do next year.
Right.
And what, because again, what he did, you know, Patrick Mahomes, is he was just patient. It's like, hey, you're going to play cover two? I'll throw underneath. I'll do check downs. I'll do screens. I'll run around, do these all short passes, and then occasionally try to hit you deep and hit Tyreek Hill or some one of the other receivers. That's what he needed to do.
I can't remember what analyst said it, but I think they said it best. There's a difference between throwing from a platform of inspiration rather than desperation.
Right.
And I saw more of the latter in Russ this year.
Desperation, I think, was injuries.
You know, and I think if we can give comfort, you know, in a pocket for an aging quarterback, you know, and especially for a team that loves to run the football, you know, like I said, I think as an organization, you know, the Seahawks can clearly do that. And I love the fact that they promoted a defensive, you know, person, because that's, that shows strength in your team.
Right.
You know, I don't think or Russell, you know, forgot how to quarterback or coach. I think they're still good at both, you know, and, you know, and eventually, you know, they prove that. And, you know, organizations that, you know, are fearful of changeover rapidly, and like Houston and Miami, that's why they're a mess. You know, they don't develop any continuity.
No, agreed.
But, I thank you for your insights.
Okay,
you know,
Derek.
You always bring something to the table.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jimmy in Port Angeles. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Thanks for putting on a show like this, man. It's like the peasants get to talk to the king.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for the kind words.
Yeah. You know, I had a few thoughts. One thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, all this talk about the position groups that, you know, that need to be upgraded in Seattle. You know, mostly they talk about the offensive line, the defensive line, and the secondary.
Right.
And I suppose I wanted to kind of focus on the defensive line. And then I also had a little comment about the All-Star games, but you know, my question on the position groups is, what I struggle with is like feeling like, yeah, we do need to upgrade these position groups, but at the same time, I love the guys we got. You know, like at center, I like Ethan Posick, but do we need a better center, a leader on that line? You know, and then in the secondary, we got good corners. They're saying we got to re-sign our corners. Well, how do we upgrade our position groups if we have to re-sign everybody? You know. But then, you know, what I really look at to me is the defensive line. You know, do we need a defensive tackle or do we need defensive ends? And then you look at what Carlos Dunlap did at the end of the year. It's like, is he not an answer there? I mean, were they really using him wrong all year and then all of a sudden they started to use him right and look what he did?
Yeah.
You know? And then Darrell Taylor, is he a defensive end or is he a linebacker?
He's a defensive end. I mean, he can do both, but again, he's a defensive end in my opinion.
Right, that's how I feel too. Maybe he's a little undersized, but he can put on weight, and you know, so there's the answers on the team already, you know. And so I don't know, I'm just torn between, do we go sign more people or do we really have what we need? And look at how we played at the end. I mean, we beat San Francisco twice, we beat Arizona, we beat playoff teams. So it's all there. Russ, you know, everybody kind of overlooks the injury, and you know, it's all just, we got to trade Russell Wilson. No, we don't, man. I watched those first couple games. He's better than that Cardinals quarterback. He's better than Dak Prescott. Those guys, when they throw up a long ball, you're like, wow, I wonder who's going to catch it. When Russell Wilson throws it up, you're like, oh, it's going to be a touchdown every time.
Yeah. Well, if you study analytics, you know, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I'll give it to you anyways. You know, in baseball, they have wins against replacements, right? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, if you lose a guy, how many wins does that take away from your team? Well, if you're talking about a quarterback as good as Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, all the top quarterbacks, that's 5 wins. Taken off your team.
Right.
I mean, you go, and so, like, for example, you you can see it, and it's done pretty much every year. Like, you know, for example, next year, you know, Aaron Rodgers, if he does go to Denver or he gets out of there, you know, there'll be a 7 or 8 win team.
Right. I couldn't, you know, and how much of what Aaron Rodgers' success has got to do with the division he plays in? Yes, he's amazing and he's great, but
yeah,
he's playing the Lions and the Bears all the time. Come on.
I know.
And then they play most of their games against the NFC South, too. They're out of division games, and that wasn't pretty either.
No.
But, you know, so then I guess all my other thoughts I had was the All-Star game. In all sports, man, is the All-Star game not matter because nobody watches? Or nobody watches because it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, you know what I think it is, and I could be wrong on this, is that you have a younger generation that you know isn't as enamored, you know, with the All-Star games. That I mean they, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a, you know, they watch the Red Zone channel to keep up on all the games during the season. You know, they watch games in snippets, and you know, to sit there 3 hours like today with the Senior Bowl, I think that you know, a lot of the younger audience isn't for that. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. There isn't. It's just a matter of preference. And it's like, if you have a choice, would you rather watch, you know, a 2-hour basketball game, a 2-hour NBA game, you know, a baseball game if there's going to be baseball? You know, it's like, you know, or do you want to watch an All-Star game? So I think what it comes down to is a lot of the younger generation is kind of shying away from it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then another part about the All-Star game that I was thinking about was you know, when you look at the professional sports level, mm-hmm. I can see how you can say that those games are meaningless.
Yeah.
But is there an element of college All-Star games where pro teams are watching it,
yeah,
and these players have an opportunity to show their talent against the best of the best at their level? And so there is actually something to the college level All-Star games that they can mm-hmm. gain out of playing well.
So I ask you,
could they actually market those games?
Yeah.
To people that are, you know, maybe there's not enough people that are that interested in sports that they're just all about, oh, look at this draft pick coming up, you know?
Yeah. But, well, like, I'll ask you this, and I've got to run, is that, are you going to watch the Senior Bowl today?
I can't because I'm working on my mom's roof, man.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Okay, that's great. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
I'll listen to it on the radio if I can find it.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Bill Williams and joining us at the bottom of the hour. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Thank you.
Hey, from a conversation earlier, I know something that would be good probably for your sleep. If you string together all our Irish Mankey's calls and put them on a loop, you might pass right out, John.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. No, seriously, though, do you think with all the turmoil that's going on, that's going to favor the first minority owner in the Denver sale?
Mm-hmm. Well, I doubt. I mean, right now it's like don't you get the feeling that Jeff Bezos is going to have the lead to be able to get it, because nobody can compete for him for money.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, definitely that way. I don't know if it'd be have a push, because I know the local Denver guy who's worth billions of dollars. He's trying to buy the team also, or at least put a group together.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be the first minority one in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd welcome it. I mean, I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
I'm
excited about the Hackett hire. Even if it doesn't land Aaron Rodgers, I think he's a strong enough mind to get a drafted quarterback, or even if they run again with Locke to improve a little bit, even though I know they have to stock some capital into a quarterback this year out of the draft if they strike out with the Rodgers.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because, you know, obviously something needs to be done, because you can't be in the AFC without a quarterback right now, and they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, did you see that silly article the other day about one option for Denver, bringing Bridgewater back under a two-year contract for $40 million?
No, I didn't.
No, yeah, a lot of Denver fans were, there was a hypothetical speaking, but they were saying there's one option.
Yeah, pretty crazy. It's obviously not happening. I mean, again, Bridgewater might come back, but at the very best, he'd be a backup.
Yeah. When the Broncos do go to the draft, if they have, I guess it wouldn't matter if they got Rodgers, you think all that stuff would be done? Yeah, that has to be done before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
All right, John. Hey, I'm glad you sound a lot better, bud. Take care.
Victor, thanks. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Wedgwood. Hey, Bob.
Hey, John. Hey. The NFL is so regimented and detailed and predictable in everything they do, particularly their scheduling. You know, like when the season ends, you know exactly who the Seahawks will play, and even the 17th game you rotate with where you finished, you know, in the conference. One thing that makes no sense, though, is the bye system. At least I can't figure it on the surface. Like, the Seahawks will have a bye with Miami and the Lions and Atlanta. Is there a rhyme or reason to it that I'm not seeing? Because
and I know this, you know, from when I was working at ESPN and trying to figure out what games to go to, right? So what ends up happening is that obviously you know that the night games, the primetime games, they're already pre-scheduled, right? And then you may have a flex somewhere in the latter part of the season. But the reason that you have to spread out the buys is that if you take too much away from too many good teams away from Fox or CBS, it kills their ratings. Because I remember different times. You know, I'll look at a schedule, and so many of the better teams are on a bye week, and it's like, well, wait a second. It's like, what game am I going to go to? There's no good games. And so it waters down, you know, Fox and CBS. And, you know, remember, you know, they pay, you know, $1 billion each, and that's probably going to go up to $2 billion. And so you don't want to water down the product for big payers like that. So there is a rhyme and a reason.
I guess I don't see it because they are so predictable. Like my thought would be like, why not a whole division get to buy? Like the NFC West get to buy. And then when they come back, the Seahawks play the Cardinals and the Rams play the 49ers. And you don't have the, you know, you're playing somebody coming off a bye thing. I think why the NFL wouldn't want to do that is because they couldn't stand the idea of having the NFC East off for a week because that's their baby. And oh my God, the world would fall apart if there was a weekend where the Eagles and the Cowboys didn't play.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem with that. I mean, if I don't know if you probably don't agree with me, but I'm thinking right now with all the changes at quarterback, coaches, you name it, is that there's only five playoff teams right now in the NFC. Dallas and the four teams in the NFC West. So if you take the NFC West out of the question, what games are you going to watch? There's nothing left. You got one playoff team. That's why...
I mean, the NFL is so, I mean, teams will, in any market will watch any market, which is why my next question for you is they hankered so much to get a team in Los Angeles. But why? I mean, you know, look at the Rams fans. They're very ambivalent about the whole thing. And, John, I wanted to ask you, too, when is the Rams' salary dispensation going to run out? Or is that just a perpetual thing? Because I know I've heard you say, but
within a year or two.
It seems to me like they get a lot of extra. I mean, how are they doing it? Everybody's, even Cooper Kupp signed a new salary.
Yeah.
I heard that the NFL was so grateful to the Cronkies for bringing the team there that they're doing them some favors. Now, is that
there's no
that
cap
might
favors.
Be a little conspiracy theory.
No, there's no cap favors.
Okay.
None. And you remember, Jerry Jones was very much involved in getting the L.A. thing brokered.
Yeah. Why would he? I mean,
that's just Jerry.
What was his involvement?
I mean, if you have a team in L.A., theoretically, you're going to make more money. And if you have two teams,
has that stood out though? I mean, they built SoFi. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Okay. So, thank you. And.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Bill Williamson coming up next.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us is Bill Williamson. And so, Bill, you by midweek, you were thinking it was going to happen this way. Josh McDaniels, head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Raiders are never boring. They always make huge news, and they've been doing it. It's been a crazy year, John, and, you know, to think that this team, you know, the John Gruden controversy, the Henry Ruggs thing, that was just a tragedy. And then, you know, they go on this tailspin, and then they have to win their last four games in a row, and they do it. You know, Rich Bisaccia, players love him. They go to the playoffs. They lose to a team that goes to the Super Bowl. Not good enough for Mark Davis. He goes, finds the New England connection. Josh McDaniels' first year in New England was the Tuck Rule year, you know. Now he's a Raider, and it's wild.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, is this a good hire or a bad hire?
I don't know. I mean, there's I don't know if it deserves as much praise as it's getting nationally. I think, you know, it's being, you know, a consensus home run hire, and I think that's disingenuous if you look at his history in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
That was, excuse me, that was a disaster, you know? I mean, an absolute disaster. And he had issues with players. He traded Jay Cutler, who at the time was a 25-year-old Pro Bowl player who had a lot. He was coveted. I mean, a lot of people wanted that job. Josh McDaniels gets in a beef with him and trades him 6 weeks after getting the job. And then he goes 11-17 and he has his own videotaping scandal. He can't get along with people and he's out. And, you know, and then he spurns the Colts at the altar 4 years ago. So Josh McDaniels is a really elite offensive mind. That I don't think there's any doubt about that. And he works really well with quarterbacks. So there's a lot of good things to like. But there's some warning signs as well. So who knows? But if he, you know, he said at his press conference last week that he learned that he needed to deal with people better from his Denver experience. Maybe that'll work. He has Dave Ziegler, a college teammate, with him now. And maybe Ziegler will be, you know, balance him out a little bit. Maybe it'll work.
We'll see. I'm not a big fan of the move, but then, hey, if he has improved himself, then maybe it can work out. But boy, I'm skeptical.
Yeah, and you know, Mark Davis is a hands-off owner. He really wants to win, like, you know, everybody does. Well, maybe not everybody, as we've seen this last week. But the thing about Mark is he knows that he's not the football guy. He knows that he's not his father. So he will allow them to do their thing, which may be a good thing or maybe a bad thing.
So the question is going to be, who's really going to be in charge of personnel? Because, you know, obviously, you know, people said, oh, yeah, Mayock did this and Mayock did this. But you knew it was John Gruden making the decisions. Is that going to be the same thing for Josh McDaniels?
I think Josh McDaniels is similar to Gruden in part that he is a control guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Dave Ziegler said that he's in charge of the roster.
Yeah, right.
Josh McDaniels is going to be a big part of it as well. But I think what they're banking on is their relationship and their trust of each other. So I don't know if they're really that worried about it. You know, I don't know if there's a big ego fight in this deal. And, you know, Dave Ziegler is getting a lot of credit as this great hire. Bill Belichick ran the show in New England, so we don't know exactly how good he is. These comments aren't to poo-poo this hire, you know, this partnership. It's just we don't know. You know, there's some unknowns here. These guys got to prove themselves.
So how good of a team is this right now?
Well, it made the playoffs. It was 10-7. I think, you know, just I don't know if you say it's a sure playoff team going into next year. It's, you know, it's the bottom of the AFC playoff run, but it's certainly a contender, and it was certainly an attractive roster to these guys to leave New England. So, yeah, it can win, and they're going to make moves. I think it's going to be a busy offseason. And, you know, I think they're going to make moves to try to get into the Super Bowl, and we'll see what happens. These playoffs showed us that it's so, you know, the difference between going and not going is pretty flimsy, you know. I mean, Kansas City could have made it. Buffalo could have made it. The 49ers could have made it. You know, Packers could have made it. These games are so close. So if the Raiders make a couple of moves and have a little luck, they could be in the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, they make a couple of moves that don't work and they have some bad luck, they can be a 7-win team. So who knows? I think that's kind of the NFL these days.
What were your thoughts on the Brian Flores lawsuit?
I found it to be very sad. You know, very... Yeah. It's just if those allegations are true, it's just despicable, you know, and it just saddens me that this is where we are. But it's it's reality, and you know, if the allegations are true, then I hope he gets what he desires, and I hope you know the people who perpetrated this deal with it, you know, get the repercussions. But again, I think sadness is my overriding feeling.
Yeah, because again, I mean, if it's true that the owner wanted to pay him $100,000 for each loss, it's illegal and crazy.
Yeah, it's illegal. I mean, if that's true, he's got to go, right? I mean, they have to remove the team from him. He's got to be forced to sell if it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that today. Roger Goodell came out and he says, oh, we're going to have an independent investigators look at this thing. It's like, oh, that worked out well in the Washington situation.
Yeah. You know, the NFL if you look at the last two playoff rounds, right?
Yeah.
I think it's the greatest human theater in the world.
Uh-huh, agreed.
NFL football is a great product to play. The league, the structure, the officiating is a mess. It tries to screw itself up so bad, but the play on the field overrides it, and that's why we're there, because of those games and the excitement. And it's really, like I said, the best human drama that I think is out there, but the people that run it are trying to screw it up so badly.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because again, it's like, this is a true mess. And then the way things are going right now, we know that Miami is interviewing Kellen Moore today, Mike McDaniels from the 49ers tomorrow, and will make a hire probably by Monday. Then sounds like Josh McCown, with no coaching experience, may get the Houston job. And we figure that ultimately, because they're all at the Senior Bowl together, you know, you're going to see eventually, even though Eric Bieniemy is visiting tomorrow down in New Orleans, but I think that you'll see, you know, Dennis Allen being back promoted as the head coach. That means no minority hires, none.
Yeah, if it goes 9-9 and no minority hires, and a guy like Josh McCown has no coaching experience.
Zero.
And he interviewed last year, and we all, you know, scoffed at it. He didn't coach anywhere last year, I don't believe, right?
He did not, no.
Yeah, so when you see the things like this, you understand the reason for this lawsuit. This is an example of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mind-boggling. And I don't know if it's done on purpose, but, boy, it makes you wonder, I think, at the very least.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And then the crazy part is that, you know, he's jeopardized his career because there's a chance that he may not be able to get back in the league.
I can see that. I was that's the first thing that I thought of when that came out is, man, this guy must be really in his convictions, because I don't know if he gets hired again, you know. I wish somebody would hire him.
I wish a
free thinking ownership would say, hey, wait a second. He didn't do anything wrong here. He just standing by his convictions and being a leader, isn't that what you want in a head coach? Isn't that somebody you want to lead your franchise? And if it's not your franchise that's being affected, I don't know if it's real risky. And then if you say, well, okay, I'm going to get a call from Roger Goodell, well, what? Hey, Roger, it's none of your business. This is your deal. That lawsuit's your deal. This is my money. My team is my deal. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive, but I don't know why a team wouldn't want to hire him unless, you know, distraction. But, I mean, hey, the distractions come up all the time.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I would love to see the Saints hire him.
I would too. Yeah. I think it'd be great, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, no.
And then just on another subject, have you ever seen a conference that has this many good young quarterbacks in the AFC? 9 quarterbacks that are 26 years or younger, and many of them former top first-round picks, many of them first-round picks, but all of them so talented. I mean, I've never seen a conference as saturated as this one, the AFC.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, I'm a huge quarterback fan. I just love great quarterback play. And I just soaked up the last 2 rounds of the playoffs, you know, and the Super Bowl should be the same thing. And, you know, Joe Burrow's a lot of fun, and he's only in his second year. And I got to be honest, I don't consider myself this huge quarterback savant. I just enjoy it. But coming out of college, I didn't know if he was going to be, I thought he might be like more bigger Mayfield's career than his own so far. I didn't know if it was gonna translate, but yeah, he's got it and he's tremendous. And Josh Allen, you know, I can watch Patrick Mahomes play 52 Sundays a year, and it's tremendous. And you know, I cover a lot of AFC West, and having Mahomes and Herbert in there, it's going to be the Broncos better figure something out at quarterback, and the Raiders better load up on defense, because, I mean, that's a tough task, I tell you that. And then, you know, I think we're talking about the new coaches and, you know, disappointment that there's no minority hires, and Jacksonville may have screwed up the process, but I think Jacksonville nailed the coaching.
I really
like Doug Peterson. I think he's underrated. I think he's forgotten. I mean, this is a guy who hoisted Lombardi not too long ago, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I think he's really going to help that young quarterback. And I think that, you know, in a year or so, we're adding that quarterback to, wow, the AFC is loaded at quarterback. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be part of that conversation.
Bill Williamson, how can everybody get a hold of what you do?
Well, I cover the Raiders at SB Nation, Silver and Black Pride, B. Williamson, NFL Twitter, and I appreciate it, John.
Okay, Bill Williamson, thank you for joining us. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
How's it going?
Man, I'll tell you, it's great to be back on the John Clayton Show, heading into Super Bowl week, the final week of the 2021 football season. Shout out to Matt, the MC, for getting me on the airwaves of 710 Cairo, home of the 8 years since the Super Bowl Seahawks, and team looking for a locksmith, the Seattle Mariners, so I can bring it to the show. And now that the cat is out of the bag, John Clayton, I can let this cat out of the bag. I got a call last week from Washington owner Dan Snyder asking me if he could call this team the Commandos. I told him, hell no.
Oh, there you go.
That's how they became the Commanders.
Very good.
And speaking of cats in bags, it's a good thing you weren't making title game predictions last week, John Clayton, and just went with mine, the Rams and the Bengals. And that was after I picked 3 out of 4 in the divisional playoffs and was a mere 13 seconds away from going 4 for 4. Dizzy Dean once said, if you can do it, it ain't bragging.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ain't bragging because I can't do it. But when you pick 5 games right out of 10,279 over 20 years, I got to bring it up, right?
I agree. I think it's a good thing that you
anyway,
did.
Look, as I mentioned last week, John Clayton, the NFC title game to me was the game of the day because of what was on the line, the opportunity to become the second team to play and possibly win a Super Bowl in their own stadium for the Rams and for the 49ers, the chance to snatch that away from an NFC West California no-love rival by making it an even seven in a row. The 49ers rolled in there with the mindset of, you know, not only are we going to prevent you from playing a Super Bowl in your own house, we're going to have our feet up on the coffee table when we get back in 2 weeks. But as we saw, the big moves that the Rams made to build this team have paid off because all of those teams were making big plays at big times. Moving to the AFC title game, Professor, not only was it a tale of two halves, it was a tale of 2 13-seconds and a tale of two OTs. We saw what the Chiefs did in the final 13 seconds of that game against the Bills, moved the ball from their 25 to the Buffalo 30, kicked a field goal to send it into overtime. But in the title game, with 13 seconds to go in the first half against the Bengals, the Chiefs had that first and 10 at the Cincinnati 15, got a pass interference, ball was spotted in the, at the one, and then Patrick Mahomes threw two incomplete passes on the next two downs. They came away with 0 points and weren't able to add to that 21-10 lead. And then also in that divisional playoff game, the Bills against the Bills, the Chiefs won the coin toss, received the ball, marched right down the field, and had the game-winning touchdown. In the title game, the Chiefs won the coin toss. The Bengals played some defense, forced a turnover, went down, kicked the game-winning field goal, and punched their ticket to Super Bowl 56. And so that really just proved how OT is really supposed to work. And lastly, John Clayton, this is a Saturday that I wish the last caller of the John Clayton Show got as much time as the first caller, because I've got a lot to say about this Brian Flores matter. The timing couldn't have been worse for the NFL the week before the Super Bowl, but it couldn't be better for NFL fans due to the seriousness of the situation. You know, this is the down and dirty secret bookend to a season that goes along with the race norming revelation at the start of the season and the John Gruden emails mixed in the middle. But I'll wrap it up by saying Eddie Glaude Jr., the department head of African American Studies at Princeton University, put it better than I could: behind that shield is ugliness.
Mm-hmm. Can't disagree. Hey, thank you as always, Commando.
My best to Mrs. Clayton. Talk to John Clayton.
Have a good weekend. And, of course, we'll be back next week at 8 to 11. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.